Hi, this is Dean Kuntz. Welcome to my podcast. Not long ago, I did an interview with a reporter who asked me a bizarre question right off the top. He said, "What is it like to have been a god of publishing since the day you started?" My wife was present and burst into hysterical laughter. The whole idea that I'm a god of anything makes a wife amused. But of course, I didn't begin on the bestseller list and don't consider myself a god of anything. And most people don't understand how many years I was writing before the books were successful. The first novel I ever sold was to Ace Books, a small publisher that specialized in science fiction, mystery, and westerns. And Ace had an Ace Doubles line, which were two books in one volume. And for your money, you not only got two novels, but you got two covers. The back of the book was another cover. The books began at each end and met in the middle, and sometimes one was longer than the other, and sometimes they were of equal length. My first book was called Star Quest. If I'd called it Star Trek, I would have been instantaneously famous and wealthy, and I would have known William Shatner, which would have been a boon to my life. But unfortunately, mine was called Star Quest, and the editor said, "You know, your book is a little shorter than usual, so we're not going to be able to pay you the $1,250 full advance. We're going to have to pay you $1,000. Because we're going to be required to pay the other writer $1,500 for his, because his is longer." And I agreed to that because two things. I was eager to sell my first book, and $1,000 in the mid-60s was a lot more money then than it is now. So I agreed to this, but when the book came out and I saw the novel on the other side, it looked to me like it was about the same size as mine. His name was Emil Pataia, and he was a science fiction writer of considerable publication at that time. And a few years passed, and I was at a convention and ran into Emil Pataia, and I said, "Oh, my first novel was on the same Ace Doubles as yours." And he said, "Yes, I remember." And I said, "Because of you, I had to take only $1,000 instead of the $1,250 advance." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I was told my novel was shorter than yours, and therefore you would have to be paid more money for your half of the Ace Double." And he said, "Well, that's interesting, because I was told your novel was longer than mine, and mine was shorter, and I would have to take $1,000 instead of $1,250. So the publisher had lied to both of us in order to save $500, the point at which I realized that this was a dog-eat-dog sort of business. I'd later published five books at Lancer Books, which went out of business. They were five science fiction novels. And this going out of business thing became a sort of trend for people who publish me, sort of theme of my early career. I published one book at Popular Library, another science fiction novel, and Popular Library went out of business. Now, they didn't go out of business immediately upon publishing my book. It often took a few years. I published a book at Curtis Books, another science fiction novel, and they went out of business. I published one at Ballantine, and after publishing one, they said, "Whoa, everybody who publishes them is going out of business," and they didn't seem to want to accept another novel from me. I did publish two early novels with Bantam Books, which stayed in business and eventually became my publisher in my more modern incarnation as a suspense writer. After leaving science fiction, I had done 20 novels in science fiction, and I decided this was not my genre. This is not what I wanted to do, and I was still very young, and I could leave. So I moved on to mainstream suspense, and I went to Bob's Merrill. There I did four books as Brian Coffey, a pen name that it was insisted I have to use because everybody thought of me as a science fiction writer. And if I was writing mysteries, that would confuse people. So Brian Coffey was chosen because Brian is a Scottish name and so is Coffey. And a lot of the top suspense writers of that time, like Alastair MacLean, had Scottish names. When my first Brian Coffey novel arrived in galleys for me to proofread, I discovered that the copy editor had added a lot of said-isms to the book. My dialogue when I'm writing between two characters does not use he said, she said, because I think if the characters are properly developed, you can hear who's speaking without being told every time the dialogue changes. And there was a lot of brisk dialogue between two characters in this book. Said-isms are variations on the word said, because some people feel in dialogue just saying he said, she said is not dramatic enough. Said-isms are actually very bad writing. And the copy editor had added said-isms throughout the book, so every exchange of dialogue was identified. And I came to a section which was four pages of dialogue between a man and a woman, and it was dramatic dialogue, and the copy editor had started it out with a very high-energy said-ism. Something like, "Don't do that," he shouted. "I'll do what I want," she shrilled. And as this progressed, there was ever more dramatic sedisms until we got near the end, where they were exclaiming and crying out and doing all sorts of extreme sedisms. And it got to the last two exchanges of dialogue. And he said, "Don't do that," he shrilled. I think several people shrilled throughout this. "I will if I want," she ejaculated. Now, there's two problems with that sedism. One of them, it is a woman, and I don't think that fits. I had to take that book back to the publisher and say, look, all this has to be reset and all this copy editing has to come out. That was a day before I had approval of copy editing, and I was young and beginning. So I did four books for Bob's Merrill as by Brian Coffey, and The Face of Fear was the last of those. The first printing was completely defective, and some of them survived, but the binding falls apart. So they trashed it and did a second printing, which was very tiny. And I must say, I feel no regret to tell you that Bob's Merrill eventually went out of business, like so many of my early publishers. I then published at M. Evans a novel called Hanging On. It was a comic novel. It was well-reviewed, but it had no sales to speak of. And I was told, well, you know, comic novels don't sell well. So for many years, I purposely kept comedy out of my novels. And they said, if we publish more books like this, we will go out of business. And they also seemed to recognize how many of my publishers had gone out of business. I moved on to Dial Press and did a pen name book for a fresh start. Pen names are always a way to hide what you've done in the past if it hasn't been successful. And I did a book called Strike Deep by Anthony North. And the publisher wanted the pen name to be so deeply secret that we created a false biography. And on the book it said, Anthony North once worked for the Pentagon and now lives with his wife and three children in Jamaica. This was deceitful and terrible in a way, but it worked. Dial Press published that one book. We didn't do any more together, and Dial Press is now long out of business. I published at Athenaeum then, a prestige house. I did a book called After the Last Race. And they didn't publish a ton of suspense at Athenaeum. They were a more highbrow house. And there were two partners had formed it, and they were revered people in the publishing business. And After the Last Race did reasonably well, and they sold paperback rights. But my second book with them was Night Chills. And there were rumors that these publishers were going to split, that they were at each other's throat, the partners who owned this company, and had come to loathe each other. And the business was full of the rumor that at any moment this all was going to dissolve. And I had put a lot of work into Night Chills, so one of the partners was also my editor, and I went to lunch with him, and I had the manuscript in a box, and I said to him, Michael, I don't want to give you this manuscript if it's true that you're about to leave Athenaeum, because I know that if this is left here with your partner, he will dump the book because it will have been your book, and I will be an orphan writer. And I was told by my editor, one of the partners, that no, these are all rumors. This is not going to happen. If the book's finished, hand it to me. It'll be published, and I'll see that it's given a great send-off. So nervously, I passed the manuscript box across the table at lunch. And the next morning, it was in the New York Times that these two had split up and that my publisher had left the company. He must have known this sitting across the table from me, but my book then became an orphan book. And his partner loathed me as much as he had loathed him and gave the book no support. And that was my last book at Athenaeum. Years later, Athenaeum went out of business. That was the Kuntz curse settled upon them very well. Then I moved and published to Lippincott a book called Prison of Ice, which has been reissued and revised under the name Icebound. And a second book I did for Lippincott was a book called The Voice of the Night. It was also supposed to have been under the pen name David Axton, which had been used on Prison of Ice. But in fact, something went wrong with the book at Lippincott. At first, it seemed to be all swimmingly wonderful because they reacted to the manuscript by saying, this is great. This book is going to make you a star. We are going to go all out. The editor actually told me it's perfect, perfect, perfect. Then he said, except the final 80 pages. They had to be revised so that the hero would die. The villain would be so traumatized by the death of the hero that he would be reformed. Now, if you've ever read the book, that would be sheer nonsense, and I couldn't possibly have done it. But they wouldn't publish the book in a major way without these changes. So I moved the book to Doubleday. Lippincott eventually went out of business. The Kuntz curse worked on them as well. And at Doubleday, I put it under the Brian Coffey name, which I had regained from Bob's Merrill because they had gone out of business. Soon after that, I did not do another book with Random House, and soon with Lippincott, but soon after that, I moved to Random House. There I did three novels as K.R. Dwyer, a new pen name. The fourth novel I delivered as Dwyer, Random House deemed was uncommercial. It was a book called The Vision, and they wanted their money back. This is a terrible event for a young writer trying to struggle along because you live on the money they pay you in advance to write the novel. But I paid them their money back, and my agent took the book out. And fortunately, Putnam decided the book was not uncommercial after all. And that began my 15-year run at Putnam, where within three or four books, we were having bestsellers. But in the middle of this, I thought to myself, why not become a film writer? That has to be easier than this. And maybe I could start putting film studios out of business. But then I thought about that again, because I had been doing some film writing, and I decided, well, there's a better thing. I mean, rather than become a film writer, why not amputate my right foot? Or why not shoot myself in the head? So I decided to stay with novels, and I was with Putnam for 15 years and moved from Putnam to Knopf and from Knopf to Bantam, where I reside today, where I am not a god of publishing and where I never forget where I started and how far a trip it has been. Visit us at deankuntz.com. We've got a new website. We think you'll enjoy it. And my newest novel, soon to hit stores, is Brother Odd.